Welcome to this week's episode of the CPG View, the number one CPG information source for global omnichannel leaders. All right, Jen, thank you so much for joining this week's episode of the CPG View. You and I have known each other for some time now. We've been in similar circles and so happy to have you on. Before we get started, would you mind introducing yourself and the company you're with?
A little late. It's good to see you again, Don. I know it's been a little while. I'm Jen Almashny. I am Vice President, General Manager of the Rocketbook business, which is a part of the BIC International business. I've been with BIC now almost 5 years. And prior to that, I was with J&J, Walmart.com, and grew up in the consulting industry. So I'm excited for today.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, you know, our mission is to be the number one CPG information source for global omnichannel leaders, and having folks like you on really just helps get us one step closer from a community perspective. So I just wanted to extend the appreciation on our side. So we'll dive in here. So, you know, as you and I have had somewhat similar careers in the types of companies we work for and the sizes, so I think we probably speak a similar type of language. And when you think about innovation in e-commerce, interested in your experience, what's been some of the most significant changes in the e-commerce landscape in recent years? And how have you adapted to those changes at Rocketbook?
Yeah, it's a great question, because it has evolved. And, you know, I always say I cut my teeth in, you know, Walmart.com more than 10 years ago. And so e-commerce has evolved so much. But even then, I would say the pre-pandemic, post-pandemic phase, and the importance of the blend of the role that digital marketing, digital media plays, along with more of the commercial side of e-commerce. I would say, you know, what I've observed, and especially sitting in the role that I'm in now with Rocketbook, which is a very e-commerce, digital forward business model, that much of our sales and our influence happens in a digital ecosystem. And I'd say before, you know, back in the day when we probably first met 3-4 years ago, pre-pandemic, it was about really learning and understanding the basic mechanics of platforms like Amazon's of the world. How do you maintain price integrity? How do you be visible in very basic media vehicles like AMS or DSP? And, you know, as I've seen, you fast forward, you have the pandemic that hits and you have the explosion of all things social. You have, you know, generations. I have a 9-year-old son and a 6-year-old daughter that are obsessed. They're on their devices and they're sort of like their playing ground at home, that I watch them consume content and information in a way that gives me insight into this is the generation of how you're going to influence ultimately when they have purchase power. And so, you know, for me, I think some of the things that have evolved probably in the last year or two is how you really get somebody interested. You know, if you think about the brands that have flipped things on their head, whether it's introducing like us at Rockbook, trying to create a new category, it's taking an existing category like regular, you know, paper handwriting and notebooks to an experience that's that plus adding in a digital element to it. It requires, you know, education. It requires getting folks interested in doing something different. And so folks that are really good content creators, that are really good communicators, that use these points in these platforms, that know how to draw you in really fast, where you don't even have to think of why you're stopping to consume whatever you're being served. So I think the role of content is one of the biggest things that have evolved. And then, you know, probably playing towards that, democratizing how you show up as a content creator. So the tools, the access, similar to when Amazon opened up 3P and 3P, 1P became sort of, you know, open access marketplace. I feel like in the media space, it's become the same. You're only as good as smart as you are in the access to the everyday tools in order to build your presence and sort of communicate your brand. So that for me is like watching this happen right in front of me is really, really quite fascinating.
Yeah, you bring up a really good point. I think even just as consumers, I follow a couple of people on, you know, whether they're on Instagram and YouTube. I know like Tesla just came out with a new vehicle, and I don't even think about it now. The one or two people I follow, I know they're going to have a review on this product. And I know you just go there. So even to your point, as not only as an operator in your experience, but just the consumer side of this, like understanding how it all works seamlessly, I think is super important. And I agree with you. That's something that has materially changed in the last, you know, 5+ years. It wasn't that advanced or developed in my experience either, which, you know, I think you and I both have worked on very large brands that have very dominant market share. And it just wasn't as sophisticated 5 years ago. So that's a really good point. Well, you know, I wanted to ask you as we think about leadership, you know, from the time I met you, you struck me as the type of leader who not only has a high business IQ, but a high EQ. Could you share an instance in your journey where your leadership has impacted the organization, particularly with regards to digital transformation?
Yes. You know, and it's interesting for us being in this lane, a lot of it is the how you bring people along. Because I think you can dissect the what, here's what we have to do, but the other side of the equation doesn't work unless you crack that, the how you translate what can feel really out of your lane and really hard and complicated. So, you know, for me and many, the role I'm in now, the role that I was brought in, you know, to BIC to lead a global digital center, even back in my time at J&J, for me, the bringing folks along has come down to a couple of things. One is keeping it really simple and making it approachable for everybody. Because I do believe like this is just, we're all consumers at the end of the day. And when you break things down to simple parts where someone can understand, it makes it less threatening and it makes it less feeling hard and intimidating, where that's where I found that folks just automatically disengage when they hear digital. That's not me, or e-commerce, not my lane. Where, you know, for me, it's drawing the parallels and making it very easy based on everyday, we're all consumers. So that's one. I think the second thing too is you have to have a lot of heart for what you're doing. Like, unless you really are interested yourself, like I don't like to sign up for things that I don't genuinely believe can and should be done, but can only be done with, you know, the people around you. So I do think having a level of, you know, grit and tenacity and kind of the, you know, you have to have, bring some energy to what you're doing, where folks want to give energy back and to learn, which is, you know, big, but there's no right answer ever to anything. That is the thing that I've learned and kind of why I keep getting drawn down this path, that, you know, it's always evolving and there's always really hard challenges to solve. And so bringing the smarts of others who think through things in different ways, I feel like also is really important in, you know, driving digital change.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on the simple almost always wins. And I think about some of the transformations that I've been a part of, either as a participant or had the fortunate opportunity to be a leader of. It really does come down to the ability to synthesize complex things into very simple, digestible, you know, tidbits of information that people can, whether it's on, you know, whether it's a one pager or a two page document, mm-hmm. front and back, just the ability to really synthesize that down for people to get behind. One thing I've also found is simplicity is important. Also, listening is important. And what I've seen in my journey is people oftentimes have the most doubt when or they express an unsatisfaction with some type of change. And it's come down for me when those individuals don't feel like they've been heard. So trying to find ways to really find almost like the most skeptical person without calling them out and like drawing them into like, what are the two things that you're most concerned about that we can talk through? Because that's just one thing I've seen in doing a couple of these types of transformations is if you can address the most skeptical person's concerns, the rest of the room or the rest of the company, the rest of the team, the business unit, what have you is like, yeah, okay. If he or she's happy, then I'm sure we're okay.
I could not agree more. And interesting, like, I've also found that often, like, when you really listen, many times when things get misunderstood, everyone really is saying the same thing, but just saying it in a slightly different language. And so I'm a huge nut for frameworks. I know that's like the consulting side of you, but for me, introducing and sort of reinforcing some really simple mnemonic, it'll help everyone communicate in a common language. It'll help ask a certain question where, you know, it might uncover somebody's frustration or confusion point, but anchor it back to something. So for example, when I was first joined BIC, you know, BIC, like many companies pre-pandemic, we're still very early in the global kind of organizational making these capabilities and this, you know, the basics and foundations as a fabric, everyday way of doing things. And so when I introduced this frame, many, many companies have some sort of e-commerce, you know, 4Ps version, but for e-commerce. So ours was Spark, which is search, price, assortment, ratings, reviews, and content. And, you know, first sharing with folks the importance and like what these principles are, putting in the right measures and systems and process in place and having it be a global language. It was fascinating to even see, you know, partners in the Middle East, Africa, who were just getting introduced to Amazon in Egypt, as an example, to the US team that was the most sophisticated of all, all of us being able to translate, share assets, share a language that I found that, you know, way of having a connection point. And that was sort of our glue for the company. You know, fast forward now, you know, almost more than doubled in consumption and sell through and in sell in and globally in every channel. So those are things for me that are, you know, I like to put points on the board and, you know, chase the numbers sometimes too. So those are things too that are, you know, exciting.
Love that. Love that. Well, you know, as we think about your role as the GM at Rocketbook, you've been responsible for growing a new category with the reusable notebook innovations. I actually was an early adopter. Even before I think you took the role, I had a product. Maybe my daughter has it now, but I was an early adopter to it.
I love that. Awesome.
Yeah, fan of the brand. Can you elaborate on the strategies you've implemented building the brand, particularly in merging the physical and digital writing experiences?
Yeah. Well, first, thank you for being an early adopter. Obviously, it's like the first time when you see a product on a physical shelf that's yours, it's like, ooh, it's exciting. You know, for me, and there's still a lot that we're learning and that I'm learning as a leader in building out this category. And, you know, we have a very, very, very strong patent. So, you know, we're really continuing to carve out this experience. I think similar to what I mentioned about Spark, the simplicity of having a very clear set of priorities might feel like a cliche, but are like pillars to growth, which keep everyone anchored in staying focused. Because I think when you're relatively new, building a category still, you know, if I were to walk into a room, you'd probably be one exception to 100 others in the room that don't know about Rocketbook. So we're still very much, you know, trying to drive awareness, not only to our brand, but to this category and segment. You know, for me, it's how do you drive a level of trial? Because it comes down to seeing and experiencing the Rocketbook, you know, product. And so for those who might not be aware of what Rocketbook is, it's a physical paper-like notebook. The writing is just like you're writing in a paper notebook, but we have proprietary kind of paper-like feel that you spray, or you can take a wet cloth or something and wipe away your handwriting quite quickly. And then we also have a proprietary app that you can upload your notes, search your note, handwritten notes, or transcribe it from handwriting into text. So this is not quite in the lane of, you know, iPad, full digital, but not, you know, many more capabilities than a spiral notebook, paper-based notebook. And so for me, it's been trying to keep really simple. What's the one hook that's going to get someone interested? And, you know, the learning and uncovering, we've tried a lot of different angles over time. Even before my time, there's a sustainability angle. you know, so there's a waste kind of elimination for folks that really care about getting rid of single use paper and that play. Then you have the digital folks that love this idea of being able to save things, easy access to things. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But then where do we find our point of differentiation? Are we a digital? Are we trying to compete against, you know, the Apple, the iPads of the world? Or are we trying to compete against the needs of the spiral notebooks? And so finding our lane, and for me, it's come down to three things. One is the simple focus and a point of differentiation to draw in. For us, it's the waste elimination that we found over the last year, that staying really anchored into that mission and that purpose, even in our messaging or our creative, will help drive a level of household penetration to get folks to first pique interest, but then also try. Then what's going to be the tipping point, you know, to actually convert and make the purchase? Because we sit somewhere, you know, we're above a $5 notebook, but we're nowhere near, you know, a $200 Remarkable, or somewhere in the, you know, $20 to $40 price point. So what's going to get someone interested enough? And this is where I talked about creative before, and also, you know, your very smart pricing promotional strategies. But for me, the driving the point of conversion, and where are we pushing people? We've declared the second kind of strategy for us is we're a DTC kind of legacy business and brand, but we're using Amazon and physical in-store at Walmart in a really smart way to drive that first point of conversion. So you'll see our promotional strategies follow in that way, where it'll, you know, it's the lowers the barrier of entry to just try. Because once you try, then you build this circle of like, you've experienced this before. Yeah. Once you try it, it's like, this thing's super cool. And it drives this level of like advocacy, which I haven't seen in any other business, because there's a novelty and there's a newness to the experience that once you try us, it's fascinating. Our growth engine is word of mouth. It's a very, you know, startup-y sort of way of growing. But even as we're, you know, a relatively sizable, bigger startup now, at, you know, $30 million, that when folks advocate and tell someone about a Rocketbook, it just feeds the system. So, you know, for me, those are the three things: household penetration, where are we going to stay really disciplined to drive that first point of conversion? How are we going to delight someone to then advocate and tell someone else to try this? So,
yeah, love that. I think you're thinking about it in so many of the right ways. One of the interesting things, we had a friend of the podcast, Matt, who's the SVP of Stanley, the mugs company. And one of the points he brought up early in their journey was understanding the user persona and really understanding the groups and the cohorts very well. And I could see certainly, I'm sure you and the team have done that at Rocketbook. Well, I wanted to ask you in closing, you know, we've got trends emerging in the e-commerce space, digital marketing space, which you and I have been in the last, you know, probably decade-ish. How are you thinking about, you know, Rocketbook adapting to these changes as we think about the path forward?
Yeah, you know, for me, it's the how we educate through influence. I kind of went back to the explosion and the relevancy of content and how content is consumed, but also how it has this stopping power. And, you know, for a brand that's new, it's exceptionally cluttered. You know, I'm sure in any social media feed, you just consumed and served a lot of stuff that, you know, for us, it's how do you break through the clutter, but also give time to pause and learn. And so for me, you know, where this, for us, what we're really pushing and experimenting is trying to find those interesting hooks so that we force a level of pause. Because for us, social and how you influence. So tapping into really interesting kind of subcultures of influencer networks. You know, influencer marketing has always been like a thing, but for us, because of that, what we know has been our foundation in word of mouth, finding really, really smart, amazing content creators that bring that kind of authentic touch for us is where I think I would place my bets on where that's going to explode. The second thing too is, and then I think about like my kids and how they're already pushing a level of purchase power, even though they don't quite have they got some cash, they don't have a credit card yet, but I watch them. And I think this whole concept of less touches to get to the purchase point, right? There's a lot more when you're younger. You don't overthink things. Your impulse, you see, you want to buy and you go. And so I think for any of these platforms are going to make that point of purchase with less clicks even shorter. So we think Amazon's of the world has buy now. You still have to click about 3 or 4 times. I would predict that, you know, you have more social platforms that are getting there that are going to make it so extremely seamless. You see something, you buy it, it ships you. So I think from an e-commerce standpoint, the shortening that path to the click is going to be where we'll see some really interesting things happen too.
Well, this was awesome. You know, just recapping quickly here, we talked about innovation in the space. We talked about leadership. We talked about the strategy and your pillar approach and the framework approach that nerds like you and I embrace, and then future trends and predictions. So I think this was a very, very helpful and enjoyable time. And just again, wanted to extend appreciation on behalf of the CPG View for joining this week's episode.
Thanks so much, Don. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the CPG View, the number one CPG information source for global omnichannel leaders. Mm-hmm.